Thank you very much for coming back from lunch. This panel, which will end at 3 o'clock sharp, because my colleagues have to be in a cab at about 3:05, is devoted to really answering the last two questions on the invitation that you received. What obstacles and other challenges must we confront as we confront these issues? And here we're hoping that our panelists can talk about conditions, public consciousness in the various successor states at this point, and what, how fertile the ground is to build on this momentum that we're trying to establish. And secondly, what kind of an impact can such an approach have on the peace-building process in the Balkans and for that matter, elsewhere? And I've asked Maciej Klemenčić to start, since, of course, Slovenia did start this process back in the late 1980s and 90s, and it seemed that that he should be the first domino in this panel.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I would not say that Slovenia started this process. Of course not. But
you're a just scholar, I see.
Okay, this is the thing that we're not going to agree with. We're not going to agree about within this panel, I guess. So let me start by saying that I'm really happy when I heard today that Slovenian program of Voice of America has been abolished. Why? Because Slovenia has done so well. And okay, now this, the question of my perspective or Slovene historian's perspective towards this project is whether I am insider or outsider, whether I am looking on the Yugoslav crisis from the outside or from the inside. And now as a historian and someone who has skills in the languages, including Cyrillic alphabet, which I'm very, very proud to read, to be able to read, and also as someone who did quite a few of works on, who published a lot on the history of these problems, I am insider. But in 2005, or since 2004, since Slovenia became part of European Union, I am looking this on the problems of the so-called Balkans from the outside. But let me say so, where the Balkans begin, this is the story that we all know, and when you would ask a Croat, he would say that the Balkans starts at Drina River or at the Bosnian or Serbian-Croatian border, and so forth and so forth. I mean, I'm not going to get into this anymore, but just to give you my own perspective on how I'm looking upon this. Okay, now, as far as the question of future of this project, I believe that we just began to solve a lot of problems, a lot of historical controversies, and I believe that there are lots of them to be solved in the same manner as we started doing this for the rest of the problem that we just tried to solve. And so I would hope that this project, or another one, maybe Scholars Initiative number 2, would continue for another decade or so, because by doing this, the way that we are doing it, we would be able to solve and we would be able to communicate in an appropriate manner so that we would be able to continue to solve the controversies, historical controversies, and by doing that, we would also contribute to the understanding among the peoples of former Yugoslavia, or among what I'm doing, what from the perspective of today's, I'm talking about between or among successor states of the former Yugoslavia. By doing that, and let me conclude here, we would be able also to let also other countries of the former Yugoslavia, which would be, this would be the contribution of ours towards better understanding, but not only that, also towards inclusion of those countries to the European Union. And that's my conclusion.
Maciej reminds me, we have this interview with Voice of America tomorrow, and Maciej was not invited to this, because Slovenia is no longer regarded as part of the focus area that VOA funds. And at the beginning of this project, there were very few Slovenian scholars who were involved because they were distancing themselves geographically and culturally. And much as I'm still using my Habsburg Hungarian pronunciations here. Much as Maciej has helped, Professor Klemencic has, our Croatian colleague Drago Roksandic faced the very same challenge when, in our meeting in Sarajevo, we only had one or two Croatian scholars who were going to come, and Drago was able to really progressively destroy the barriers, dismantle the barriers that ultimately, once leveled, led to 24 Croatian scholars coming on board the project. Before I yield the floor to Drago, let me say I should correct myself. This is a roundtable discussion, and so maybe what I should do is, you know, ask this question, and then we can have free discussion, and then at some point decide to bring in the audience. I believe that's the format that would work best. But Drago, if I could ask you these two questions about what you think the prospects right now of Croatia and the Croatian people being receptive to this kind of cross-border reconciliation or dialogue leading to ultimately, hopefully, reconciliation. Is there space in the Croatian public consciousness for this?
Well, first of all, the formulation itself of the question is somehow doubtful. Controversy that divide Bosniaks, Croats, and so on, you know, people are not monolithic that much. Croatian public opinion is, in some views, profoundly divided in some topics which are directly related to the project problematique. It's all the same everywhere else. So from that point of view, in spite that there are dividing lines, it's out of any doubt. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say that we are in the period of reconsideration of that experience, which is very much related to prospects of integration to the European Union and NATO. You know, and I find it really very important from the intellectual point of view. It is a very good chance for us, everybody in the region, and that is why I think that makes sense, and this is the most important justification of scholars' initiative. I do agree with Matjaž that scholars' initiative number two has to take place. But referring to some of statements already made, I think that it's very important to question our methodology to a large extent. You know, it's about narratives, and I'm sure that everybody in this hall knows quite a lot about theories related to narratives and so on, you know. But we have to define in theoretical terms our approaches for the future much better, especially if the intention is how to integrate the results of the project into curricula, into public, into media discourse and so on. This is one aspect I would like us. The other aspect, and that's what I've already mentioned, I want to develop it in few sentences right now, this is that problem of democratic legacy. You know, I wouldn't like us to be perceived as if there is no democratic heritage in Southeastern Europe at all. Major changes have been taking place in Southeastern Europe in the 20th century. This is not the lost century. The region is no more agrarian. It is mostly urbanized. Social structures, economic, cultural, have been profoundly changed. So if speaking about the future, it cannot be done in terms of 19th century ideological notions. You know, this is the key question. Obviously, what has been done has not been, how to say, healthy in historical terms enough in order to face the challenge of democratic transition, obviously. And this is the key question for the future for us. We have missed the best opportunity. Yugoslavia was a country open to the world. It communicated politically, economically, even militarily, not to speak. You know, there were relatively more Fulbright scholars from Yugoslavia and Austria, as far as I know, than any other European country. It's all the same with Humboldt and so on. You know, so we cannot escape that important question, why did it turn into catastrophe? I'm not speaking about Yugoslavia, I'm speaking about society. I'm speaking about alternatives. Obviously, it is impossible to ignore it. You know, so our future researches have to cope, including everything what has been done until now, maybe with a relatively longer historical perspective of 80s, at least, or 90s, in order to identify more profoundly those shortcomings or key problem which prevented us from facing the challenges of 89, 90 in European context, in the world context, of course, in a creative way. You know, this is very important for everybody, including Slovenes. Regional scholars. Well, if it means international scholars, it's really very important. I always insist that there are more qualified scholars dealing with the heritage of Yugoslavia in the United States than in the whole of Yugoslavia.
Exactly. You know, yeah, it's, I agree with that one.
And in many ways more qualified in qualitative terms, you know, than is the case. It's all the same with some other countries, you know. So this is very much against the thesis on ignorance about developments in Yugoslavia in 1990. It was a known country. It was not Albania. It was a known country. You know, so from that point of view, I am deeply convinced that nothing can be done without cooperation with qualified people in the world. And that is the very end of it. And that is the key message, probably, of Scholars Initiative, without not only Charles Ingrao, you know, but obviously quite a lot of other people. I assure you, it wouldn't be possible to do anything. And in that case, this is the very last conclusion. What we need for the future to come, since we are in the United States Institute for Peace in cooperation also with National Endowment for Democracy, bilateral communications, this project has been integrated into bilateral cooperation of, let's say, Croatia and the United States, any other country and the United States, and in such terms transformed into multilateral project. In that case, it would be much easier to communicate with Ministry for Education or any other authority which is actually relevant for the development of the researches. Well, that's it.
Yeah. You speak of ownership here. When we first began the project, the idea of Western scholars was to be the emulsifying force, that we could bring together groups and create an environment for them. At the same time, starting in the Sarajevo meeting, we began to see people talking about, well, is this something that the West is imposing on us? And I think it's very important that we have ownership within the successor states, and hopefully can, even though we will continue, because we have the resources of the industrialized world, certainly of the United States, in terms of funding and whatever, that scholars from within the region and the public at large can sustain the momentum. I don't want to presume who would want to build on this to talk about what the attitude was within your respective republic and how receptive is. I know there's been a lot of media attention in Serbia. I wonder if Dušan or Mila would care to.
Okay.
Point.
I can respond as far as I know things. Me, myself, I gave an interview to the Daily Danas, which is, let's say, influential among intellectuals or those who seek to be independent or democratic oriented. And I put some emphasis, according to my opinions, about what the value of this project is. And I didn't take any press clippings with me to justify that what I say now, but it's almost half of the big daily paper page. And also they quoted part of what Charlie Ingrao summarized I think was in a third team report, summary of third team report, and they translated it and published alongside with the interview of mine. And there are also some appearances and mentioning of this project in TV, in media as well. And scholar community in a Belgrade talk about. Everyone, whatever their attitude towards the project, but they are talking about it. So it's something which became well known now. But I wish to take a chance of this time to warn our public and scholars on the first place on one fact which I'm talking about last 7-8 years, about capacity of history on Yugoslavia, whether it's here in the States or Europe or down there in a country. I have to say that we didn't have enough history of Yugoslavia. We didn't have perfect history of Yugoslavia until it collapsed. Probably no corner of the world have, especially in a recent history, accurate and accomplished picture of what was that recent past. So we made the steps forward, considerable steps in the 80s. Even late 70s in Yugoslavia. And a war that happened in the area intercepted somehow that efforts. And what is the worst, it moved things back. And we should take care of and have in mind that fact that history as a science is very much jeopardized with what happened in reality in the political sphere, because everyone put pressure on historiography to help justify cause of secession or independence or whatever you call it. And again, we instead of prosper scholar historiography, we again have type of apology and some type of orthodoxy. Once we experience in Yugoslavia, socialist Yugoslavia, the type and challenging of orthodoxy, which was imposed at least as early as 1948 after 5th Congress of Communist Party, and when Tito addressed what should be history of a kingdom of Yugoslavia, which served as a guidelines for most or many generation of historians. And just when we enter in a space where we could make some modern approaches in the field of history, we've been obstructed, we've been embarrassed, whatever term we can use it. And now looks like that we, on many fields, became from the starting point again. And about experience of reconstructing bonds, which I endorse strongly in this project, and at other similar projects supported by some European foundations, they really helped to establish bridges again, reestablish old friendships, and create new friendships. And within our team experience about war in Croatia, I dealt with recently with many young scholars from Institute of Croat History who published or who research on that topic, and I involved much of their work, of course, with a certain comments. But I would like to emphasize again that this report is full expression of common endeavor, both from colleagues from Zagreb, me, myself, and certain colleagues from Belgrade. It's not easy to challenge, for instance, something, or at least in a parts of the story. When you have a declaration, for instance, in Croatia, a declaration promulgated by Croat parliament on homeland war. And, well, maybe there is no much problem for those coming and joining this project from Serbia, but those who work in Croatia could challenge some, at least, comments or inconvenience, whatever. And I won't take any further time. I have lots of notes, but I would skip them for the moment. If there is extra time, I will be glad to respond on interest.
I do want to build on a point that James Gow made at the end of the last session. When Ozan Junets, head of military intelligence during the war of Croatia, first got together with Nila Bialajec, they had never met before. I can remember some effort necessary to get one to call the other to introduce himself on the phone. And then, as Mila pointed out after their first face-to-face meeting in Zagreb, that by the end of their encounter, their first encounter, it was like old friends. And I like to think of this tandem as sort of the poster child of what we had originally thought we could do and hoped we could do. And the degree to which they've come together, I think it makes me very hopeful, certainly, for the prospects for the project among academics, at least. Of course, one wonders beyond that. Sean, you want to...
Yeah. Yeah, Matthias said when Slovenia left it something. Matthias said when Slovenia left it, Yugoslavia, not the Balkan, they changed its perspective. And now they're looking on the Balkan as insiders and outsiders, something like this. It's really the right definition of the Balkanization. By definition, Balkanization is the conflicts about dividing the small pieces on the smaller by the local partners, but not Balkanization with active participation of the great powers. Slovenia is not by itself great power, but is going to be because it's member of European Union. That's a first point. Charlie's team is looking like a Balkanization symphony. There's a lot of foreigners and the local people. And I hope that we will not finish in the war, that we will finish with some products like textbooks, papers, training courses for politicians, political decision makers, with active communication with public and media. That means that we will go maybe to try to help people, ordinary people and politicians, to take their proper responsibility for their future and today's. The second that I want to say is, if I'm looking in the academic future of this project, it will bring us to the question of the regional Balkan framework of the stories. Now we have different stories about different cases or different controversies. I think that we will need also to make one, let's say, review or critical review on European values which are existing in each of the states or societies, plus the Balkan values or identities. What I'm thinking will not be European Union without Benelux. At the beginning was Benelux, which solved the religious war. After that came Serbian Croatian, came French-German reconciliation. The point is, will be better, will be easier, will be more functional if people became the member of European Unions with their proper identities. And the last is the gap between the history as the science and the gap between the history as the life, as the process. You know, at the second level, in the Balkan, it's well known that we are producing too much history. Every day we have historical events, and we could not consume them. Sometimes coming foreigners to help us to consume that. But from the other side, not enough reflections. All this happened. And I hope that this project will help, is one of them, who is helping to build one critical reflection on presency, on past, and that it will help to future. As a really last comment is, we have to look in the future also as the joint projects or common efforts on the local people and the foreigners, including states, because of the definition of the Balkanization. Thank you.
I will be the next. Well, today Drago Roksandić opened one very interesting subject about what was the importance of the minorities and the history textbooks in the dissolution of Yugoslavia, and what was happened after the dissolution of Yugoslavia with minorities and the history textbooks. I can say a few more words about the history textbooks because I'm one of the history textbook writers. When we are talking about minorities in Serbia, Montenegro, Croatia and Bosnia and Herzegovina, we can also, my opinion is, we can also speak about the school history textbooks. Till now, most of them show the great animosity and ignorance in Serbia against the Croats, almost, in Croatia against the Serbs, and in Bosnia among the three constitutive nations, which are constitutive only on the paper, usually. But in the reality, for example, in the Republic of Srpska, Croats and the Bosniaks are not equal with the Serbs in everyday life, same as the Serbs are not equal with the Bosniaks and Croats in the Federation, and same as the Croats are not equal with the Bosniaks in Federation. They're in a worse position. For example, I will give you, in fact, I will give you one example on a history textbook from Croatia, Nikola Vucic's history textbook. The young Croats are faced in his textbook from the childhood that the Serbs never exist in Croatia till the beginning of the 20th century. That in the concentration camps, Serbs died, but on the first place died mostly Jews. After that, the Croats, who were the anti-fascists, gypsies, and at the end, some of the Serbs, which is totally wrong, of course. This is not the truth. And on the Serbian side, Croats are always the bad guys. They done wrong to the Serbs all the time, and in the Vojvodina, Croats doesn't exist, which is also totally wrong. Two of my students gave me two sentences about the Croats. One of them first said, Croats genetically hate Serbs. This is totally wrong. And the second sentence is, Croats are a genocidal nation. I am faced with that with my students. Same as in Novi Sad, as in Banja Luka. And I have a hard work with them through the year of their studies to learn them that this is not the truth, but the truth that they have is the truth that they pick up from the schools, from their history textbooks, and from their parents. So, if we are speaking about the textbooks, I think it can be the part of the beginning of what was happened with the children and the youngs during the civil war in Yugoslavia and after that. In attention to change it, I create an alternative history textbook for Bosnia and Herzegovina named The Making of the Modern World, where I try to find the communication between these three nations. I said three nations because there are intention in Bosnia and Herzegovina to recreate these three nations in one nation, which is also totally wrong. In Bosnia and Herzegovina, we should have in our mind that we have three nations, Serbs, Croats, and Bosniaks. There were no one nation, Bosniaks. We couldn't face with this. But there are intention in some political surrounds, in some politicians usually is talking about that, try to do that. So I try to make a communication in the best possible way, that I think that is the best possible way. It's a cultural history. I want to present in that book the Serbian cultural heritage, Croatian cultural heritage, same as the Bosniak cultural heritage in the history textbook, and to conservate the political history. I think that is the most important. We could not open, or may I say, we could not openly speaking about what politicians done to us in Bosnia and Herzegovina as soon as it possible. Now, it's so hard to do. First, my opinion is we should speak first place about cultural history, about cultural heritage. On second place, maybe the second alternative textbook should be about religion, history of the religion. And then, on the last place, third place, we should speak about the political history to the youths, to the youngs. They are very sensitive because of their background. Also, I was faced that most of Bosnian historians, scientists, and teachers, in fact, helped to nationalism to survive and flourish through the narratives, mythical and historical, nationalist and patriotic, based on facts, fictions, prejudice, truths, falsehoods, and exaggerations. After examining in primary and secondary history school books, it concludes that education and its narratives, mythical as well as historical, are partly responsible for what is going on with the national hate in Bosnia and Herzegovina. We, the nations, we, the nationals, are also responsible for creating not only dangerous myths, but more importantly, a dangerous reality. Now, I would like to say one joke. I said this is a joke. It became among the Greeks a family joke that also we can put into the Bosnia, partially, of course. The story of Nikos, a 10-year-old child, son of my, as I said, family friends, who was very excited at the prospect of traveling to Turkey with his parents because he wanted to see Turks. Nikos was at the age of 12. After spending a few days in Turkey, he complained to his parents that he didn't see the Turks. Puzzled Nikos exclaimed, "You do not understand. I don't want to see the people," to his parents, when they told them that he saw the Turks. He said, "I don't want to see the people, I want to see the Turks." This was the main idea. Unfortunately, Nikos' idea of the Turks seemed to have been of non-human creatures. We can also say this sentence so similar to the Bosnian people. One thing definitely is certain, that the schools and the teachers should be involved in whatever the subject is, critical thinking. Yet, this is not what Serbian, Croatian, and Bosniak education and educators, not everyone, of course, try to enable their students to do. As we know, myths and narratives occupied Bosnian educational and, unfortunately, too, scientific system. They are widely used for national buildings purposes and are an indispensable tool of nationalism and nationalistic thinking. Myths about ourselves and about others, narratives that shape our identity and contrast it to theirs, can explain beliefs, motives and acts, but only partially. Undeniably, there are creations and constructions, but the leap to the statement "everything is created and constructed" is too great to make. As in the case with nationalism, certain beliefs were cultivated and manipulated in order to serve various purposes, mainly the claim to self-determination. Central to these beliefs was the notion of truth, ethnical, historical, political, and truth whose validity lay beyond the boundaries of the group of people that were ready to fight for it. Thus, the truth concerned the nation, yet was not defined or restricted by its boundaries. It was seen as a truth regardless of its national character. It was the truth about the nation. This truth was then used to justify acts of violence against the enemy nation. Nationalism, I think, is not necessarily bad, destructive or manipulative. I can say for myself that I'm a nationalist. Of course, I like my homeland. Croats who are here in this room can understand if I said kruha i hajduk, bread and the hajduk. Hajduk is a football club from Split, my native town. So, as I said, nationalism is not necessarily bad, but unfortunately the trouble is thought that the nation-building process always involves the systematic overvaluation of self and systematic devaluation of outsiders. This practice makes mutual respect impossible. And at the end, I will finish with one sentence of my colleague from Faculty of Philosophy, Novi Sad. This sentence is really sadness. He said, "We are not only historians, we should be the graduated patriots." Thank you.
Which reminds me of an article that our next speaker, Ilbu Husa, asked me to write a couple of years ago about textbooks. And the title, I don't know if the title quite makes the transfer into ship, but the title of the article is "Weapons of Mass Instruction." Ilber perhaps faces, and Kosovo maybe faces the greatest task of overcoming barriers, but let him talk about it. Ilber's been in Sally, is rearranging his office right now, yes, some of you may have heard in the newspaper. Go ahead.
Well, Dule, who is my friend before this project, and I hope you will remain a friend. Dule Dušan Janić is my friend before I was in this project, and we will remain as such. And he reminded me of a very old joke talking about Slovenians, namely joke about Montenegrins who said, "We and Russians are 200 million. Nasi Rusa 200 miliona." And I think maybe this is actually powerful tool when we want to engage the track too in what we are doing, because in the end of the day we don't know how much we can re-engage the public in purely academic debate. And because I think here we should stress two important elements. The first is what our colleague Drago Roksandić said about the quality of our historians. So if you are about to educate public, I think the first step should be to educate historians. And I fully agree with this. And the second is that in the space of former Yugoslavia, history is transmitted and is accepted, not always by academic institutions or means. That's why a joke about 200 whatever million Montenegrins or Slovenians or Albanians is actually a powerful tool to restart maybe debating about how we can approach these different things. Because in the end of the day, history in this part of the world was also transmitted by folk songs. One guslar, those who know what is gusle, could have more a public than any whatever academician that could be a PhD and that could write a book that are not for for serious consumption. And I think at this point this is also very important to stress that historians, together with the media people, with those who have very much contaminated the public space, historians were pretty much approached as the guardians of the national truth, or those who should be in the front line in the media war. So I think, to come again, this is also a very important issue if you are going to open up debate, how much you are actually going to educate historians and later on how much you are going to educate the public. And if the history is transmitted and accepted by different means, so by definition is multidimensional, I think what is happening, at least in Kosovo, and I think in Serbia and some other places, is very important what documentaries are playing. Things like documentaries being transmitted in B92, both in Serbian and then in some televisions in Kosovo, I think have played more important role than any of whatever discussions under the round tables involving academicians. Of course, the history was very much described and debated there, involving a very famous death of Yugoslavia. I think this should be part of the multidimensional track too, that for sure would involve a lot of other elements, educating historians as well. And this will be my reflection in the beginning.
Are there any questions people would like to ask, direct to any of the panelists? Yes. People should come to line up at the mic and make it more effective. Yes, please.
Hi, my name is Dr. Toll. I'm from Virginia Tech. I'm kind of interested in the panel's perspective on the kind of history from below that seems to be emergent in the region. The war memoirs that you see in all the bookshops. Because that's another way in which people learn history, and it's this kind of popular history. It's not official history, and it's not critical history, but it seems to be very, very important. People having gone through the trauma of war, there's this need to narrate that themselves. And I wanted to find out how that particular process is kind of popular history, which is also appearing on internet sites as well, how that fits into your project.
Well, I don't know why are you looking at me, you know, but
looking down the table.
I would like to say in Croatia, modern writers have done much more for a reconsideration of recent historical experience than historians themselves. You know, books which have been recently published are largely read, discussed, publicly perceived, and so on as important documents. What historians are producing is not attracting that much attention. You know. And this is really a very serious concern for people like me. Obviously, historians are inseparable from what, national ideology includes as a precondition of any historical writing. This is everywhere the case. Well, this is not the way I think about it, but unfortunately it is still pretty much prevailing everywhere, I would say. So from that point of view, Scholars Initiative can be revealing also. You know, you have a lot of different approaches in front of you. You cannot avoid assessments and so on, evaluations which are very far from yours and so on, you know. So that is that problem of multi-perspective approaches, but this is in human terms, you know, because in scholarly terms, in terms of methods, it's not all the same, you know. So that is why I would like us actually to put those questions forward and redefine the scope. But it's very close to me that without filmmakers, writers, and so on, that recent historical experience cannot be properly dealt with. It was all the same before 1990, you know. For many years, there were no historical researches on 1948. Mm-hmm. And these were writers producing texts upon it. These were filmmakers and things like that. Obviously, there is a certain, how to say, a lack of, I wouldn't say to insist upon willingness, but some structural weaknesses in history writing, more or less everywhere. I like history. I'm really a historian by choice, not by chance, you know. But I have to be critical. And that is my approach of it. We have to be innovative.
Matar?
Okay, I do agree with what just now Drago said, and that's why I wanted him to start with, because I knew that we would agree. But see, the problem is whether the public, whether the audience is interesting in those histories of the 1990s. And I must say that now within Slovenia, there is not so much interest into those stories of the 1990s anymore. I mean, with my press liaison, we fought to get something at least published on the project. Before I got this Baker interview with James Baker, there was no chances to get something published, at least something on the project. And see, I mean, if we were to have something like that in Ljubljana, a panel like this, it would attract maybe 15 people altogether, which is the fact, okay, when we had Sabrina Ramé, and she obviously is a well-known name in the field, and also her ways of speaking are much better than mine, but she attracted even only 15, 20 people. When we had this, when we had the presentation of the team two, and this was in such a prestigious environment as the Academy of Sciences building in Ljubljana, Slovenia. So this is why I think it is important to have the books that we are producing here also published in Slovene language, because then we would get at least some attention by the audiences. Because see, even the scholars in Slovenia, or I think also within other states of successor states of former Yugoslavia, do not like to read foreign languages. So this is one of the facts which we have to understand when we are talking about problems that we are facing. Thank you.
Okay. Other comments? Yes. Yeah, Tishan.
Okay.
at the beginning of the period about I was reporting 74 preparing Milosevic, the main historical conclusions coming from the sides of the writers. One book on Milutin, that's Milutin is the popular Serbian name, was published in 150,000 copies. After that started some kind of the hyperproduction of the books and poetries and so on. Today in Serbia, the most popular book about the Kosovo is Ćosić, Dobrica Ćosić, book titled Kosovo. The guy said, he's academician, he said at the beginning of the book, the first sentence is, I never been in Kosovo. Really, he never been in Kosovo. But he is deciding about our politics on Kosovo in the last 15 years.
More.
Or maybe more. Okay, that the first point is, we have really seriously to read this kind of the books and to learn what we missed it to do as the scientists, the scholars, and what we have to do. That's one. The second, don't forget, Balkan society is not so, I would say, technically developed like American. Virtual communication, internet is something what is belonging to the maybe few percentage of the people. So-called oral history is the most influential. Oral history means what ordinary people are talking about. Usually they are talking about the things and interpretation which they picked up from TV, electronic media, radio, TV. But sometimes by the so-called secret voices, half voices. And indeed, I will finish with that. Milosevic was master of widespreading half voices. And Tuđman also. That's one special technology, how to use indeed propaganda, secret service instruments and others, and to widespread some facts, these facts. Anyway, conclusion. In our work, we have really seriously to care about that, but I know any illusion that my book never will be ever will be most popular than Ćosić's book. We have forget that. When folk singer is folk singer, he is talking to the wide population. For that, and for our project, for that is really important to decide to which target groups we want to address.
Yes, question.
This is first time in my life I'm coming second time to say something, but I really cannot stay silent. Let me clarify. You're not, as a historian, writers of the past. You're writing future. Someone in 200 years will read your books and make decision, should we start it again or should we find another way to do it? We're all knowing that pink elephant is in the room. I was there in 88 when 100,000 or whatever Serbs marched from Kosovo. I was there where Kosovars cried children on my hands for what Serbs have done to them. We know exactly what Swiss has done by letting tanks coming from Eastern Europe. We know about Zimmerman. We know what had happened. But you are still writers of the future. So please don't be discouraged with 15 people. Think 200 years from now, someone will read your book and make very important decision. Thank you.
I wonder what the prospects are. If we look at media in the various parts of former Yugoslavia, is the media reinforcing existing stereotypes, or is there space for alternative views? Certainly what we've seen in the media reaction in places like Croatia and Serbia, it's very refreshing to see how much coverage there is. And I gather it's been positive coverage, not condemnation of a Western conspiracy or whatever. But I would be very curious to know of my colleagues how, if there is space within the media for talking about another way of looking at what happened than the standard party line, national narrative.
Oh, another question.
Well, okay, we'll go to the question first.
I'm just going to elaborate on what Mr. Roxandić and Mr. Yanis have said already, but I'm going to get a little wider perspective on the whole thing. You have mentioned the fact. To me, you are not only historians. As it happened, you are a historian, but you are scholars. This is the intellectual element of the Balkan people. Now, it is good. At this point, it appears that the nationalistic antagonism is settling down. There are contacts which are, contacts which are being established among the, probably Kosovo is the last in that, but even there is some attempts being made just recently. The question is whether the scholars, you know, it's nice writing the books, it's okay, but whether the scholars can go beyond an ivory tower aspects of the thing and get some more influence on the whole population. First, whether the scholars could, which I haven't seen very much. I know Serbia. I don't know Croatia, although I knew Croatia and Slovenia in the early 90s. But whether the scholars are able to, right now, probably they would be, but is there an effort to penetrate into media? Like we have here in the United States, we have op-eds where people are writing, and actually everybody who is reading Washington Post or New York Times most of the time first open that op-ed to see what's going on and then read the news. Whether this can be done. The second thing is, now this is just one step. The second thing, which is very important, we are all tending to look down on politicians. The politicians are actually making the history of our countries. You are writing about it, but they are making it. And unless our intellectual element cannot have a greater influence on the political parties in these countries, it's very difficult that something can be achieved. And another thing I just want to point out to our Slovenian friend, that is true. When there is no much interest in the history of the 90s. But when a Serbian singer comes to Ljubljana, you have standing room only over there. Or when the Slovenian, when there is a celebration of the New Year in Belgrade, the greatest number of young people who come to celebrate was from Ljubljana and Slovenia. Because that is something which is the future of the cooperation between countries. So therefore, my question is this effort, which is very laudable, could it lead to something like what I was just mentioning now. Thank you.
Perhaps our last question.
Okay.
Oh, you better step up. Go ahead.
Ardita Dunellari with Voice of America. I was wondering, from a historical perspective, the more recent history, if you were to compare the case of Croatia and the case of Bosnia, and if you were to give your opinion about how to solve Kosovo's issue, which model would you see as more successful, rather a decentralization, as in Bosnia's case, where you try and create those more local governments on these ethnic lines, or Croatia's example of just trying to integrate that population? And I'm making a point already, huh? I'd like maybe the opinion of somebody who's more detached from the situation.
Ilmer, you're detached from. No, well, would you
I'm
like
not
to?
From Croatia and Bosnia. I'm about to learn lessons learned.
Much as you are detached.
That's right, Slovenia is detached.
Okay, well, I'm not going to be here a referee, please.
Okay.
I'm not going to say something to be quoted then afterwards, but okay. Let me say so that what the end of the whole story of the former Yugoslavia or successor states of the former Yugoslavia will be, will all end up in European Union. And this is the most important part of it. Whether Kosovo is going to be independent first and then part of the European Union, there won't be, or vice versa, the result will be the same. There won't be the border between Kosovo and Serbia proper. So I think in the near future, the result will be the same. And I'm not going to answer
for perhaps how long it's going to be to
well,
get to that
of course,
point.
That's another one, of course, but I don't know the answer to that one, of course.
This reminds me of a member of our group who is not on the table right now, Gail Stokes, and he made a remark earlier this morning that reminded me of one solution that we reluctantly look at increasingly, certainly in Kosovo, and that is maybe at some point we need to give up on the project of, as he puts it, putting the toothpaste back in the tube. And certainly that is a solution that has been advocated. Gail knows that my response to that was to take a tube of toothpaste and squeeze it out and then find a way to put it back in again and then throw it at him. But this is obviously the specter to some of us, the alternatives to others, that we are trying to find to see if there is a way of avoiding that that kind of fatalism. Drago.
Listen, what's the problem? We can actually imagine the situation. There would be no Serbs at all in Kosovo, you know. But there would be a frontier of some 1,000 kilometers long, you know, between Serbia and Kosovo, and millions of people of both sides obsessed with their past, unrealized aspirations for the future, you know. Not to speak about long-term perspective impoverishment. You know, you can actually even integrate to the European Union, but this is not a panacea, you know. This is not the end of history. There is something very childish in our perceptions of the integration to the European Union. We, again, expect somebody to solve problems instead of us, You know, so from that point of view, I would be very much against such recipes for the crisis we are living in. That is, to a certain extent, an answer to your question. Actually, we have been listening to the Kosovo panel without responsible political classes, and I would say without functional democracies, there is no chance. You know, I'm not speaking about political classes, I speak about every citizen responsible for himself, herself, and things like that. Of course, we are very far from it. So from that point of view, we cannot speak about intellectuals in terms of the late 19th, early 20th century, when these were actually elites in illiterate societies. You know, today, majorities are educated. You know, the status of university professors doesn't matter that much. We can produce books, and I'm sure it makes sense, you know, but we know that decision-making processes are much more complex, you know, and to try to revive romantic models of intellectual role in societies, it doesn't make sense. Of course, it makes sense from another point of view, you know. There are all kinds of historians. There are all kinds of social sciences and so on. So the responsibility is upon us, but in different terms, as agents among many others. In some, I would like to agree and disagree with Duško in one point. You know, why the mental effects of the Second World War, when there were many more human victims than during the last war, were not psychologically that bad as they are now. What makes the difference? Media. The Second World War was, I'm speaking about the area of former Yugoslavia, you know, there was practically no radio communication. It was a privilege for 1% of the population. It was war of oral culture. But now, the most decisive element in mass mobilizations, in war confrontations, sometimes more relevant, more important than military fightings, these were media. You know. So from that point of view, I do agree with those ones who insist upon writers, filmmakers, journalists of different kinds and things, including us, scholars, in larger terms, not only historians in a narrower term, you know. So that would be my particular answer. So in the first place, responsibility, functional democracy to the extent, you know. So from that point of view, the whole question of standards is a little bit artificial, you know. And that's what I wanted to tell. Well, this is the very last sentence regarding me. You know.
I would love to pose the question about to what extent is democracy the solution, and to what extent is it a problem that leads to some of the conflicts we've seen, and why is democracy both the solution and the cause of the problem? But that's another USIP project. We are at 3 o'clock. And on behalf of my colleagues, we would like to thank you all, especially USAP and NED, for their marvelous support. And we'll hope to see you all sometime again.